Welcome to Off Leash and Unfiltered. Trigger warning, I'm Katie Pepe, delivering the truth in dog training. Hey everybody, this is your host, Katie Pepe. Before we jump in, I just wanted to take a quick second and remind you to hit the subscribe button because that helps us so much. We appreciate every subscribe and follow, and we have so much valuable information we want to share with you, so we don't want you to miss an episode. Without further ado, let's jump in. All right, let's talk about suppression today. I just made a rather lengthy post about this precise thing because I hear this word come up a lot in dog training. And it sounds like a bad thing somehow. And so I want to talk about that and make sure that we're clear on what suppression means and whether or not it's beneficial in dog training. So what I hear all the time, mostly from the purely positive crowd who doesn't believe in using anything aversive ever, what I hear from them, and sometimes others as well, is that if you punish a behavior, if you correct a behavior, you're just suppressing it. Or if you don't do it right, or if you don't, you know, whatever it is, it's like they'll say the behavior is just suppressed. But if you look up the definition of suppress, what does it mean? And it literally means to put a stop to. Right? It is to stop a behavior. That is suppression. So, yes, anytime that we reduce or eliminate a behavior, that is suppression. So when you think about it, if there's any behavior that you don't like, if your dog jumps on you and you find a way to stop him from doing that, you have suppressed that behavior. So this applies to any behavior. And so we do it all the time. We suppress behaviors all the time. It's really our specialty. So not that we don't do anything else, we do. But that's the thing that I feel like we're the most passionate about and that the people we meet really need the most help with because they don't know how to do it. And so when someone says a behavior is suppressed, I would ask them what the problem is with that. And chances are, if you ask them that, what they're going to say is, oh, well, it could regenerate. And it's like, yeah, any behavior can regenerate at any time. That's always true, right? So they're kind of implying that, like, there is something else you could do that would guarantee the behavior wasn't going to come back. And that's very misleading because there isn't. There is nothing you can do with any behavior or any dog to guarantee a behavior isn't going to come back. And the likelihood that the behavior is going to come back depends on a million factors, guys. So let's dig into that. Like, what is the likelihood? If you punish a behavior and you successfully, quote unquote, suppress it, what is the likelihood that that behavior is then going to regenerate at some point? Here are the factors you need to consider. Number one, your dog's personality. So how capable are they of learning? How capable are they of inhibiting and modifying their behavior? How capable are they of modifying the precise behavior that you're trying to stop? So that's going to look different for every dog. It's going to be a different level of difficulty. Right. So like I had a dog once who, you know, inhibiting bolting through the door was very, very easy. But inhibiting guarding was not. So it depends on what you're trying to inhibit and how difficult it is for the dog to actually make that modification. And most things aren't a problem, right? But that's one factor that you have to consider. The next factor that you have to consider is your relationship with the dog. So have you built a relationship of accountability? Does your dog respect you? Do they know you draw boundaries? Do they know you really enforce them? Do they know that the rules are real or not? That's going to make a difference too. Because if you have a dog who's running around with freedom all the time, fully autonomous, there's no rules or boundaries, they kind of do whatever they want, that dog is much less likely to feel like they have to be the best version of themselves. And so you're a lot more likely to see things regenerate, right? And their arousal is usually completely out of check, right? So it's unchecked, it's all over the place. Those dogs, of course, they're more likely to regenerate the old behaviors that we thought we got rid of. The other thing you have to consider is how good are you at the process of punishing or suppressing a behavior? Because it is a skill, and there is a right and a wrong way to do it. And there's, you know, a good, bad, and a mediocre way to do it, right? So if you don't know how to do that, if your timing of your marker is off, if your dog doesn't understand what the marker means, if you don't use a marker at all, right, you're more likely to not be successful or for it to take a lot longer to be successful. Your dog might not tie the behavior to the consequence, in which case you're likely to keep seeing the behavior. That's not really regeneration as much as it is just a failure to actually punish the behavior in the first place. But that's a possibility. The other possibility, and this one's really common, is you just don't provide a correction that's meaningful enough. So you may provide a correction that's meaningful enough to stop the behavior for now, or for a little while, right? But it doesn't take long for your dog to kind of gain the confidence, especially, again, if they're running around with that arousal unchecked, for them to just test that boundary again, right? Because the consequence was there, but it just wasn't that bad, right? So we might as well give it another try. And I've compared this before to something like a vending machine stealing your money, right? If it's just 50 cents, it might not be such a big deal and you might try it again. If not that day, maybe the next time you're at that location. But if it steals $10, right, or $50, or something of that nature, you're probably not going to put any more money in that vending machine. So the intensity of your correction can absolutely have an impact on how long lasting it is, right? If you insist on looking for the lowest possible level on your e-collar that quote unquote works, okay, but then your dog's a lot more likely in a day, in a week, to go ahead and give it another try. Whereas if you make it really uncomfortable and really send the memo home and you're skillful about it and you know how to do it, your dog is a lot less likely to test that boundary. So all this to say that anytime you eliminate a behavior, you're suppressing it. That's always true. And yes, the behavior can regenerate, but it also might not. And that's largely dependent on your dog's genetics, your relationship with them, and your skill level. These things are all factors. And so obviously to have the best chance of success, there's nothing you can do about your dog's genetics. They are what they are. To have the absolute best chance of success of actually eliminating behaviors, you need to, A, be good at it and understand the process, right? Understand what timing looks like, how to use a marker, and how to deliver a proper consequence. And you need to make sure that consequence is very meaningful. And so these are the things we teach people to do. and building a relationship with that dog of accountability. So having rules and boundaries in your everyday life and not just that one little thing you want to get rid of, right? So everyone's like, oh, I don't mind this and I don't mind that. And it's like, okay, like I understand that you don't mind it, but if you don't find ways of integrating rules, boundaries, and structure, discipline into your daily life with your dog, then it's going to be much, much more difficult for you to successfully long-term eliminate this thing that you don't like. You have to have some areas where there are rules and boundaries on a regular occurrence that your dog knows they are required to respect, right? And this keeps your dog being the best version of themselves. And so then you're a lot less likely to see these old things crop back up. So normally what we're saying is we're telling people, look, this is how you eliminate a behavior. And I just did an episode on this. We were talking about jumping, but it's pretty much the same for most behaviors where you mark it with a no when it's happening or about to happen. You follow up after that no with a very meaningful consequence. And so we're teaching people how to do that. And then the instruction is just occasionally set it up and do a little check-in. Right? Because yeah, it might need to be cleaned up again at some point, right? But if you do it and you do it well, it should stick, right? In most cases, it does. Now, in the case of something like resource guarding, which, you know, I told you, I just made a lengthy post about suppression. And it was because I saw a video from this lady. Her videos are coming across my feed all the time. And they're interesting. I actually kind of like watching her stuff, but I obviously don't always agree with her. And this is one case where I don't think I agree with her. And it's not entirely that she's wrong. It's just that her opinion to me doesn't make a lot of sense. So here's the deal. There's a third party out there, another dog trainer somewhere. I don't even know where. They had a golden retriever for training. This golden retriever was a severe resource guarder. Not uncommon, very natural, innate behavior. It was a very intense behavior. Dog was a serious customer. Okay, if you got near its food, it would bare its teeth. It would try to bite you. It would hover over its food. It was intense. They have video, and I love when trainers have video of what they're doing and what their results are. So, you know, it's kind of a shame when someone takes that and like, attaches this opinion to it that makes no sense, but I don't know, you be the judge. They trained this dog to a high level of reliability with its obedience. They did the same thing we do. Okay, so the dog knew the new sit, new down, new heel, and was e-collar trained and was very reliable and it looked great, really, really great. And then also with food, was taught respect around food so it could tolerate people walking around, just normal everyday stuff, people coming near them when they're eating, and total respect with the food. If the person didn't give them permission to eat, they didn't eat. If the person asked for the dog to give the food up, they gave it up, right? But they didn't just reach in and grab the food, just like we'd. It's the same exact thing we do. And they did it very, very well. And the dog looked great. So at the end of the beginning of the video, they show the dog ferociously guarding the food. And at the end of the video, they show a golden retriever sitting nicely, being very respectful around its food. They can walk around it. They can take it away. They can get the dog to disengage from it with commands. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know the drill, right? It's what we do. And I mean, the dog actually might have looked a little tense, but not bad at all, especially considering it's a golden retriever. Golden retrievers tend to be very, very tense, high-strung dogs. And so any behavior they do have, it tends to be a little more intense because they're just tense dogs a lot of the time. Love the show? Well, I have great news. We are offering an inexpensive subscription to our new premium content. This is content that isn't available to the general public. We make it just for our subscribers. We're going to cover a variety of new topics in these episodes, and I think it's going to be a ton of fun. So you can jump right down into the show notes to get that website address, and then skip over there and sign up for this premium content. Just wanted to take a second to let you guys know about that. Thank you so much for your support. And now, on with the show. And I have to say, you know, the person who was giving commentary on this other trainer's video, she pointed out that the dog looked really nervous, really uncomfortable, and really tense, and I just didn't see it. Yes, there was a little tension, but for a golden retriever, it looked pretty damn relaxed to me, especially considering how wound up and how dramatically they guarded their food before. This looked like a dog to me that was very confident in what was happening, knew exactly what to expect, knew exactly what the rules were. I didn't see it. And her commentary included the fact that, you know, if somebody came, she doesn't buy the fact that the guarding is gone. She said it's just suppressed. And if somebody were to come up and push the dog out of their food bowl, the dog would probably still bite them. That would be her bet. And it's like, okay, that would be my bet too. Depending on who it is, I suppose, right? If it's a person they have a relationship with of accountability who taught them all this stuff, probably not, actually. But if some rando or some kid came up and pushed the dog out of their bowl, would the dog bite them? I think there's a high likelihood of that. So, but here's the thing. Good training and inhibiting behaviors doesn't mean that your dog is going to be able to tolerate every single person in every single situation in every single scenario. That's ludicrous. So what was her point is what I'm asking. Is her point that there's something we could do with this dog to make them guaranteed safe in every situation? Should a kid be able to come up and take the dog's food away, push them out of their bowl? Is that our bar? Is that where we're setting the bar for dogs? And what if they can't? Does that mean the dogs all get euthanized? Because I have to tell you, that's a pretty tall order for a lot of dogs. My dog wouldn't put up with that. It's just insane. We've totally lost respect for the dog, for being an animal, a carnivore, a predator. Like, they have teeth. They are designed. They are programmed to bite when necessary. Now, when necessary is different from dog to dog, right? They all have different thresholds, different programming in there, but they all bite. And to think that every single dog should just be a harmless little teddy bear who would never use their teeth, even if you push them out of their food bowl. I just don't understand how, especially a dog trainer, or what she calls herself, an expert, could possibly have that opinion. And so what happens to those dogs then? And do the humans not take any responsibility for the situations that they're putting their dog in? Here's what I think. Now, if your dog has any dangerous behaviors, this is what you need to think about, right? Because it's never, is my dog 100% safe? Because I can guarantee you they're not. Even the sweetest little dogs, they're not 100% safe. They all bite, guys. They just have different thresholds. Even the small, sweet ones, right? If a kid gets up in their face and freaks them out or accidentally hurts them or who knows, that dog could bite. They all bite. No dog is 100% safe. The question for every single family in America with a dog isn't, is my dog 100% safe? It's, is my dog safe enough? Are they safe enough to live in my home with my lifestyle and my family members? Right? Because that looks wildly different from household to household. You've got your dog with their genes and their personality, and you've got all the people in your household with their genes and their personalities. You've got your lifestyle, your schedules, your friends, your neighbors, your family. And your dog has to be safe enough to live in that environment with you guys, and for you to feel confident that nothing terrible is going to happen. And the way you do that is you train the dog to be reliable, to listen to you, to have a relationship of respect and accountability, and you make that dog as safe as possible You inhibit, punish, correct, suppress the bad behaviors. You require the good behaviors. And here's the part that I think everyone's missing. And you don't put your dog in situations you shouldn't put your dog in. So to me, she has no point. Because when is someone going to come up and push my dog out of his food bowl? I'll tell you when. Fucking never. Like, I'm very comfortable having a dog in my house who I don't think could tolerate being pushed out of his food bowl. That's just not going to be a problem. Because I'm not going to put him in that situation. And I compared it to this, right? I have two male dogs. Neither one of them are neutered. They're both intact male dogs. I don't worry about them getting other dogs pregnant. Not because they wouldn't. They absolutely would if given the opportunity. I know that because every time we have a female dog that might be coming into season or was recently in season, they drive me fucking nuts. But it's not going to happen, right? They have the equipment to do it. They have the programming to do it. And it's not going to happen because I take responsibility for that. I'm not going to allow that to happen. I'm not going to put them in that situation. So that's like saying your dog can't keep his testicles unless you know that he'll never try to breed another female. What? So it doesn't make any sense. It's like, call it suppression. Suppression is fine. You can point out the holes, right? And they're not even really holes, but you can point out the fact that it's not guaranteed. But I just think that's a moot point. It's a moot point. So if you go through the motions and you do all the training and you do the quote unquote suppression, right? You inhibit the behaviors that you don't like, you punish the behaviors that you don't like. And you still think, well, with our responsible management of the dog and the training, I'm still not comfortable with the margin of error here. I'm still not comfortable with the level of risk, right? The stakes are too high. When I look at my lifestyle and my schedule and the way my household operates, when I look at the people that are in my house, the fact that I have kids, the fact that my kids aren't good at listening and following the rules, whatever it is, and you say, I'm not comfortable with this level of risk, okay, you know, get rid of the dog. That's a responsible decision. But if everyone just said, well, my dog has to be 100% guaranteed to not do this behavior ever in any situation or scenario, well, that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. For any dog, there's never a guarantee. So I just wanted to make that distinction between what is realistic and what seems to be expected, I guess. So we've got folks out there telling us that suppressing behaviors is bad, and then telling us if your dog's not 100% reliable, then you still have a problem. And it's like, okay, but there is nothing you can do to make a dog 100%. Some dogs, yeah, you can get them pretty darn close, right? They can make different decisions and they can make different decisions quickly and it's pretty easy for them and they cement something new fairly quickly and they do great and they never look back and you never see it again. And great, right? And other dogs are still going to look uncomfortable in certain situations. Right, or they're going to tip you off that, like, certain scenarios are too risky, but you just shouldn't be putting your dog in those situations most of the time, right? I'm never going to have some kid go up to my dog and take his food. We feed our dogs in their kennels anyway, right? And I'm not saying rely on management. I'm saying both, right? You train your dog to be as safe and as well-behaved as possible, and you don't put them in stupid situations, right? But you train them to be as safe as possible, so that reduces the risk of anything happening and increases the level of respect and reliability and accountability. And then if someone makes a mistake somehow, it's less likely to be a problem because you did all that training. Right? But that doesn't mean that you should expect your dog to just be a stuffy, because they're not. They're absolutely not. And I just think that's unrealistic and unfair. And I think that kind of an opinion, that kind of philosophy would just result in everyone having to get rid of their dogs. And that is 100% how we approach these kinds of things, whether it's a, you know, just annoying nuisance behaviors or it's really dangerous behaviors. It's like, okay, two-prong approach. Like, we train the dog to be as good as possible, and we inhibit those behaviors directly, and we teach the owners how to maintain a relationship with the dog of accountability and be responsible with the way they handle their dog, right? Everyone that comes here with a resource guarder, we punish guarding. We teach the out command. We teach tons of respect around food. We teach the dog they have to tolerate normal everyday stuff like people walking around and being near. And we tell people, feed your dog in their kennel. Both. We do both. Right? What we don't tell people is your dog is 100% guaranteed never to guard again. What we don't tell people is, oh, you're going to have to get rid of your dog because they're not 100%. Those are both wrong. Those would both be incorrect, right? We do have a responsibility as humans to not be stupid when it comes to our dogs. Have some respect for the dog as an animal. Make sure you catch our next episode where we're going to be talking about, we're going to do a consultation files. I haven't done one of those in a while. It's going to be a really good one about a large breed dog that actually went after the newborn baby. So really, really dangerous, serious stuff, but a lot of overlap with what we were talking about in this episode. It's going to be an interesting one. Make sure you get back here and check that one out. Hey guys, thanks for joining us today. I really hope you enjoyed the show. If there's a specific topic you'd like to hear discussed, you can send that to me directly via email or fan mail. Just jump down into the show notes. That information will be there for you. I really look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for supporting the show, and I look forward to next time.